Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 858, the NED file. This is being recorded on August 14th of the year 2015. Well, in this program, we're going to supplement and complete and finish up some information that I really had hoped to cover at greater length in For the Record 857. Due to the limitations of time, in For the Record 857, I had to conclude an article about the National Endowment for Democracy and eBay kingpin Pierre Omidyar partnering to form a fact-checking service. Now, Omidyar not only helped to finance the Maidan coup in Ukraine, he also has been the financial angel behind the recent First Look Media, and specifically has been the financial angel for Glenn Greenwald, Edward Snowden's leaking journalist of choice. We've examined the fact in recent programs, or really for some time, how the Snowden operation really drove the final nail into the coffin of Barack Obama's reboot with Russia, and also how Glenn Greenwald, far from being the altruist that he is being portrayed as being, has actually run interference for Nazi murderers and the leaderless resistance strategy. In past discussion of the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, as I call him, I also call him the Peach Fuzz Fascist and the Obverse Oswald. I've noted that the Snowden, quote, disclosures, unquote, were part of a very obvious intelligence operation for which Edward Snowden, a career spy, has fronted. And I have maintained that the whip hand in that operation was the BND, German intelligence, and the direct successor to the Galen organization. However, I've also opined that I think a major element of U.S. intel, including probably some element, a very powerful BND-linked and underground Reich-linked element of CIA was involved. The drawing closer of the National Endowment for Democracy and Pierre Omidyar raises, well, it cements that hypothesis. Again, for those who are still inclined to take the machinations of Eddie the Friendly Spook and Citizen Greenwald and others at face value, I think the things that we will be examining in this program should, well, hopefully dispel the, well, basically educate you as to the realities of the situation. Not only has Pierre Omidyar helped to finance the Ukraine coup through U.S. intelligence cutouts like USAID and the National Endowment for Democracy, but a Omidyar finance protege, a woman named Svetlana Zalishchuk, Z-A-L-I-S-C-H-U-K, is now a member of the Ukrainian parliament and is overseeing the integration of Ukraine with NATO. Again, the person that we're going to be talking about in this first article is the person who is Glenn Greenwald's financial angel. A couple of points here. I want to note that not only is the National Endowment for Democracy a cutout for U.S. intelligence, it was developed in the 1980s by William Casey, who was Ronald Reagan's campaign manager and CIA director. Casey, along with Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and Richard Nixon, as well as Alan Dulles, were the key people behind the Crusade for Freedom, an illegal covert operation that not only financed fascist forces operating in Europe, it also imported those same elements, the Ukrainian OUN, the Croatian Ustashi, Romanian Iron Guard, and others, into the U.S., where they coalesced into a key element of the Republican Party. I want to note that one of the founders of NED was Alan Weinstein. He was an academician who not only wrote a hatchet job on Alger Hiss, who was the special counsel for the Nye Committee, which had, among other things, uncovered some of the connections between U.S. industrialists and Nazi Germany and the fascist powers in Europe. Alan Weinstein also was appointed as head of the National Archives by George W. Bush, who, as we know, had the family of George W. Bush was involved with helping to finance Adolf Hitler. We've spoken about that in many programs, including, for the record, 361, 370, 435, and others, 273. And it is my considered opinion that the Bush family, including Jeb, now running for president, is the point element of the Borman Capital Network and the Underground Reich in the United States. Also note that the NEB was very close to Ronald Reagan's National Security Council. The NSC in the 1980s featured, among others, a woman named Paula Dobryansky, who was the daughter of Lev Dobryansky, the head of the UCCA, the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, the top OUNB front group in the U.S. Later, Paula Dobryansky became an undersecretary of state under George W. Bush, where among her other responsibilities was to oversee the Tibet desk. After that, we're going to take a look at an article from Robert Perry's Consortium News about Vladimir Putin's imposing restrictions on the NED and doing so under the same ethical guidelines as the U.S. Foreign Agents Registration Act. And then we're going to wind up by taking a look at how the NED operates in fact as opposed to its glossy PR front. And the articles that we're going to be looking at here reproduced in the description for the record 858, which will be published shortly. We're going to begin with another excellent article by Mark Ames from the Pando Daily of July 31st of the year 2015. What Pierre did next. And note, by the way, in addition to helping to finance the Ukraine coup, Pierre Omidyar, Narendra Modi in India, and among the people who has overseen Pierre Omidyar's philanthropic efforts in foreign countries is a veteran of the Phoenix program in Vietnam. So about Pierre Omidyar and his partnering with NED and also his apparent drawing close with Gawker Media, which has a very bad reputation, sort of a online tabloid publication, Mark Ames notes as follows. Again, Pando Daily, July 31st of 2015, what Pierre did next. The Guardian reported on Tuesday that the National Endowment for Democracy has just been banned from Russia under strict new laws regulating NGOs acting as foreign agents. In that story, The Guardian cited the fact that Intercept publisher Pierre Omidyar co-funded Ukraine revolution groups with USAID and the National Endowment for Democracy, or NED. If the Omidyar connection sounds familiar, that's because it was Pando that first broke the story in February of 2014. The Guardian linked to our original scoop in its coverage. In the 18 months since we broke the story, Ukraine has collapsed into war and despair with up to 10,000 people killed and 1.5 million internally displaced refugees, and top U.S. brass talk openly of a new Cold War with nuclear-armed Russia, while U.S. military advisors train and arm Ukrainians to wage war on Russian-backed separatists. Svetlana Zalishuk, S-V-I-T-L-A-N-A-Z-A-L-I-S-C-H-U-K, one of the founders of the Omidyar-funded NGO that helped organize last year's revolution in Kiev, is now in power as a member of parliament, a member of the new pro-NATO president's party bloc. She's gone from plucky Omidyar-funded adversarial activist to heading a parliamentary subcommittee tasked with integrating Ukraine into NATO. I can't think of another media tycoon who co-funded a pro-U.S. regime change with American intelligence cutouts like USAID and the National Endowment for Democracy. That Putin targeted the NED does not mean it's either heroic or evil. The NED's story speaks for itself. The brainchild of Reagan's CIA director, Bill Casey, the National Endowment for Democracy, was set up as an intelligence cutout to support U.S. geopolitical power and undermine unfriendly regimes. One of the NED co-founders, Alan Weinstein, explained its purpose to the Washington Post. Quote, "A lot of what we do today was done covertly 25 years ago by the CIA," unquote. Throughout its 30-year history, it's been mired in very typical CIA controversies. In the 80s, the NED was caught funding an outlawed extreme-right French paramilitary gang during socialist President Mitterrand's rule, funding a military leader's victorious election in Panama against a more moderate civilian candidate, and financing right-wing opponents of Costa Rica's democratically elected Nobel Peace Prize-winning president, whose sin was opposing Reagan's deadly, dirty war in Nicaragua. More recently, the NED was caught funding groups that organized the 2000 coup against Venezuela's democratically elected president Hugo Chavez, planting a, quote, freelance journalist, unquote, in the AP and New York Times to report on Haiti, while the NED was simultaneously funding right-wing groups to undermine Haiti's ruling party and co-funding Ukraine regime change groups with Pierre Omidyar. This week, Omidyar Network announced yet another partnership with the National Endowment for Democracy and the Poynter Institute to create an international online fact-checking hub. Poynter, by the way, is spelled P-O-Y-N-T-E-R. Continuing. Given the power that the monopoly on objective, unquote, fact-checking offers, the tie-up with NED takes the Omidyar alliance with the U.S. empire and media to new, creepier levels. In yet another Omidyar as private arm investment, Omidyar invested in the slick new Ukrainian media Romadske TV, that's H-R-O-M-A-D-S-K-E .TV, which was set up on the eve of the Maidan Revolution with initial seed funding coming from the U.S. Embassy in Kiev. Omidyar's involvement in Ukraine media and, quote, fact-checking, unquote, is all the more serious given that Washington and NATO talk about, quote, countering, unquote, Russia's overhyped information war, unquote, on the West and on Ukraine. This information war, which I covered a bit in my piece on Peter Pomerantsev, is considered a top and urgent geostrategic priority for NATO and the West. Skipping down. And now, in the last week, the latest twist to this farcical journalistic paradise S-blank-blank-blank show, Omidyar is reportedly in talks with the king of online online tabloid sleaze, Nick Denton, to invest in the latter's perma-sued organization. As Pando's Paul Carr wrote earlier this week, the ground seems to be being prepared for a full-on merger of The Intercept and Gawker backed by Omidyar's cash. As of yesterday, Nick Denton appointed John Cook, formerly editor of The Intercept, to be the, quote, temporary, unquote, executive editor of Gawker. When Cook departed The Intercept, he wrote that, quote, working with my Intercept colleagues has been one of the most fulfilling things I've done in my career, and my decision to leave was a painful one to make, unquote. At the same time, IBT reported that Chief Revenue Officer Michael Rosen had resigned from First Look Media. Rosen's departure comes just a week after John Temple, First Look's President, Audience and Products, stepped down from his job saying, quote, "There clearly is much excitement ahead for First Look, but I feel my contribution is largely complete," unquote. Perhaps it's a coincidence that both the guy who's in charge of building an audience for Intercept and the guy tasked with making it profitable have left. Or perhaps not. International Business Times quotes a source explaining that, quote, First Look would soon be moving away from trying to create a constellation of magazines and begin to focus on empowering content creators, unquote. That is, Omidyar will be investing cash in sites like Gawker alongside his investments in fact-checking sites and Ukraine revolutionary groups. How will The Intercept's audience, which accepted Greenwald's decision to privatize the Snowden secrets, to Omidyar react if Omidyar then sells Journalism Paradise to Journalism Sleaze and the Snowden secrets, our secrets, the public's secrets, wind up as capital assets in First Gawker Media? And I think that pretty much speaks for itself. Now, as far as the genesis of MED and also Vladimir Putin's decision to crack down on MED, Robert Perry writes as follows in Consortium News of July 30th of 2015. Now, note that the Washington Post, which has lurched very sharply and decisively to the right in recent months, is now owned by Jeff Bezos, B-E-Z-O-S. He is the head of Amazon. One of the points that I've made in, among other shows, for the record, 851, technocratic fascism and post-Reaganoid political dementia, is that the big tech, so to speak, the large technology firms are not benign institutions at all, whereas the NSA really doesn't give a flip about the personal details of most people's lives. They are concerned with national security issues, by and large. The big tech firms are concerned with every last bloody detail of everyone's personal lives, and they're getting it courtesy of mobile technology, social networking at all. And these are not benign institutions or individuals at all. And as you hear about the Washington Post and its neoconservative tack at this point in time, bear in mind that it is owned by Amazon's chief. Again, Consortium News, July 30th of 2015, Why Russia Shut Down MED Fronts, by Robert Perry. The Washington Post descended into the depths of neoconservative propaganda, willfully misleading its readers on matters of grave importance, apparently knows no bounds, as was demonstrated with two deceptive articles regarding Russian President Vladimir Putin and why his government is cracking down on, quote, foreign agents, unquote. If you read the Post's editorial on Wednesday and a companion op-ed by National Endowment for Democracy President Carl Gershman, you would have been led to believe that Putin is delusional, paranoid, and power-mad in his concern that outside money funneled into non-governmental organizations represents a threat to Russian sovereignty. The Post and Gershman were especially outraged that the Russians have enacted laws requiring NGOs financed from abroad and seeking to influence Russian policies to register as foreign agents, unquote, and that one of the first funding operations to fall prey to those tightened rules was Gershman's National Endowment for Democracy. The Post's editors wrote that Putin's, quote, latest move announced Tuesday is to declare that NED, to declare the NED as an undesirable, unquote, organization under the terms of a new law that Mr. Putin signed in May. The law bans groups from abroad who are deemed, quote, a threat to the foundation of the constitutional system of the Russian Federation, its defense capabilities, and its national security, unquote. Quote, the charge against the NED is patently ridiculous. The NED's grantees in Russia last year ran the gamut of civil society. They advocated transparency in public affairs, fought corruption, and promoted human rights, freedom of information, and freedom of association, among other things. All these activities make for a healthy democracy, but are seen as threatening from the Kremlin's ramparts. The new law on, quote, undesirables, unquote, comes in addition to one signed in 2012 that gave authorities the power to declare organizations foreign agents, unquote, if they engaged in any kind of politics and receive money from abroad. The designation from the Stalin era implies espionage, unquote. But there are several salient facts that the Post editors surely know but don't want you to know. The first is that NED is a U.S. government-funded organization created in 1983 to do what the CIA previously had done in financing organizations inside targeted countries to advance U.S. policy interests and, if needed, help in, quote, regime change, unquote. The secret hand behind NED's creation was CIA Director William J. Casey, who worked with senior CIA covert operations specialist Walter Raymond Jr. to establish NED in 1983. Casey from the CIA and Raymond from his assignment inside President Ronald Reagan's National Security Council, focused on creating a funding mechanism to support groups inside foreign countries that would engage in propaganda and political action that the CIA had historically organized and paid for covertly. To partially replace that CIA role, the idea emerged for a congressionally funded entity that would serve as a conduit for this money. But Casey recognized the need to hide the strings being pulled by the CIA. Obviously, quote, obviously we here at CIA should not get out front in the development of such an organization, nor should we appear to be a sponsor or advocate, unquote, Casey said in one undated letter to then White House Counselor Edwin Meese III, as Casey urged creation of a, quote, national endowment, unquote. The National Endowment for Democracy took shape in late 1983 as Congress decided to set aside pots of money within NED for the Republican and Democratic parties and for organized labor, creating enough bipartisan largesse that passage was assured. But some in Congress thought it was important to wall the NED off from any association with CIA, so a provision was included to bar the participation of any current or former CIA official, according to one congressional aide who helped to write the legislation. This aide told me that one night late in the 1983 session, as the bill was about to go to the House floor, the CIA's congressional liaison came pounding at the door to the office of Representative Dante Fischel, F-A-S-C-E-L-L, a senior Democrat on the House Foreign Affairs Committee and the chief sponsor of the bill. The frantic CIA official conveyed a single message from CIA Director Casey. The language barring the participation of CIA personnel must be struck from the bill, the aide recalled, noting that Fischel consented, not fully recognizing the significance of the demand. The aide said Fischel also consented to the Reagan administration's choice of Carl Gershman to head the NED, again, not recognizing how this decision would affect the future of the new entity and American foreign policy. Gershman, who had followed the classic neoconservative path from youthful socialism to fierce anti-communism, became NED's first and to this day only president. Though NED is technically independent of U.S. foreign policy, Gershman in the early years coordinated decisions on grants with Raymond at the NSC. For instance, on January 2, 1985, Raymond wrote to two NSC Asian experts that, quote, Carl Gershman has called concerning a possible grant to the Chinese Alliance for Democracy, or CAD. I am concerned about the political dimension to this request. We should not find ourselves in a position where we have to respond to pressure, but this request poses a real problem to Carl, unquote. Currently, Gershman's NED dispenses more than $100 million a year in U.S. government funds to various NGOs, media outlets, and activists around the world. The NED also has found itself in the middle of political destabilization campaigns against governments that have gotten on the wrong side of U.S. foreign policy. For instance, prior to the February 2014 coup in Ukraine, overthrowing elected President Viktor Yanukovych and installing an anti-Russian regime in Kiev, NED was funding scores of projects in Ukraine. A second point left out of the Post's editorial was the fact that Gershman took a personal hand in the Ukraine crisis and recognized it as an interim step toward regime change in Moscow. On September 26, 2013, Gershman published an op-ed in the Washington Post that called Ukraine, quote, the biggest prize, unquote, and explained how pulling it into the Western camp could contribute to the ultimate defeat of Russian President Putin. Quote, Ukraine's choice to join Europe will accelerate the demise of the ideology of Russian imperialism that Putin represents, unquote. Gershman wrote, quote, Russians, too, face a choice, and Putin may find himself on the losing end, not just in the near abroad, but within Russia itself, unquote. In other words, NED is a U.S. government-financed entity that has set its sights on ousting Russia's current government. A third point that the Post ignored is that the Russian law requiring outside-funded political organizations to register as foreign agents was modeled on a U.S. law, the Foreign Agent Registration Act. In other words, the U.S. government also requires individuals and entities working for foreign interests and seeking to influence U.S. policies to disclose those relationships with the U.S. Justice Department or face prison. If the Post's editors had included any or all of these three relevant factors, you would have come away with a more balanced understanding of why Russia is acting as it is. You might still object, but at least you would be aware of the full story. By concealing all three points, the Post's editors were tricking you and other readers into accepting a propagandistic viewpoint that the Russian actions were crazy and that Putin was, according to the Post's headline, power mad, unquote. And again, I think that speaks for itself. What we're going to do for the duration of the broadcast is to repeat a section of AFA program number 36 about how the NED really operates. And again, it is a most inappropriate title. This is from AFA 36 that was recorded in February of 1991. That long AFA show is about the destabilization of the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. Note very carefully here, too, although it is only a brief point, that Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania, which was the first of the former Soviet republics to be targeted for infiltration by Nazi elements that were working within U.S. intelligence, then became an epicenter for the operation of various other nationalities, including the OUNB, the Ukrainian fascists, who are back in power in Ukraine. This again from AFA 36.
We're now going to go into a very important and very terrifying article that once again is carried in Covert Action Information Bulletins issue number 35 from the fall of 1990. This is an article entitled NED Meddles in Lithuania. That's a subtitled NED, that stands for the National Endowment for Democracy, a very inappropriately named organization, as we shall see, but NED meddles in Lithuania. Its full title is Nurturing Baltic Reaction. The author is Philip Bonosky, B-O-N-O-S-K-Y. The bio information on Bonosky is as follows. Philip Bonosky was born of Lithuanian immigrant parents and has made frequent trips to Lithuania. He recorded some of his impressions in the book Beyond the Borders of Myth, New York, Praxis Publishers, 1970. And in this particular article, Philip Bonosky goes into not only the very obvious and apparently ongoing U.S. involvement with the Lithuanian independence movement, and it should be noted that it was a recent Soviet military crackdown in the Baltic states, but beyond that, it points out the enormous residual Third Reich political activity inside Lithuania under U.S. sponsorship, the main vehicle for residual Third Reich activity inside of Lithuania, are two closely linked organizations, the New York-based Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid, LCRA, and the Lithuanian Information Center, or LIC. The LCRA and the LIC are very closely linked here. They, in turn, have received heavy funding from the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, an inappropriately named organization, which has basically been used by U.S. intelligence and the military to interfere in the affairs of foreign countries for quite some time. We're going to begin reading this particular article, once again subheaded NED Meddles in Lithuania, Nurturing Baltic Reaction by Philip Bonosky. It reads, we're not going to read absolutely all of the article, but the vast bulk of it. The first section here, some history of Lithuania has gone into, and in particular, the descriptions of those two organizations, LCRA and LIC, are laid out. In April of 1990, the Soviet Republic of Lithuania startled the world by declaring itself independent of the USSR. The U.S. has not yet recognized Lithuania as independent, and Bush's political remarks have been moderate. But beneath this facade of calm statecraft, there runs a familiar current of silent U.S. involvement in the political affairs of another country. The most visible intervention has been via the National Endowment for Democracy, or NED, which has supplied funds, equipment, and advice to the principal nationalist opposition party, Sąjūdis, spelled S-A-G-U-D-I-S. I would interrupt here. There are a number of Lithuanian names here that I'm going to be reading. My Lithuanian is non-existent. I may be mispronouncing some of these names. The listeners will bear with me. I'm going to do the best I can, but I've never heard most of these words spoken aloud, so I'm going to basically shoot from the hip if I incorrectly mispronounce many of these names, and I'd be willing to bet I do. Well, don't shoot the piano player. He's doing the best he can. So I'm going to improvise on the pronunciation of these Lithuanian names. Continuing. NED has chosen to funnel its Lithuanian aid through one organization, the New York-based Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid, or LCRA, and its propaganda arm, the Lithuanian Information Center, or LIC. These two organizations are run by arch-conservative Catholic clergy. The founder, current board chair, and the man who has, quote, presided over the steady growth and increasing effectiveness, unquote, of LCRA, Bishop Vincentas Burgess, and his name is spelled V-I-N-C-E-N-T-A-S, and Burgess, and I'm not sure how that's pronounced, is B-R-I-Z-G-Y-S, was allegedly a Nazi collaborator during World War II. One more time, the founder, current board chair, and the man who has, quote, presided over the steady growth and increasing effectiveness of LCRA, Bishop Vincentas Burgess, was allegedly a Nazi collaborator during World War II. Burgess vehemently denies the charge. Sejudis itself is linked in a variety of ways to the symbols and sentiments of the fascist and Nazi periods in Baltic history. And we're now going to go into, in the next section, those Nazi and fascist periods. Lithuania lies on the eastern shore of the Baltic Sea, bordered on the south by Poland, on the north by the Latvian SSR, and on the east by the Belarusian SSR. It is the westernmost extent of the Soviet Union, with a population, as of 1980, of just over 3 million. In the 14th century, invading Germans conquered the area and imposed the Catholic faith. In the modern era, Lithuania has been repeatedly buffeted by the shifting political and military map of Europe. Lithuania declared independence from Tsarist Russia in 1918, but in 1926, the Nationalist Party took power through a military coup. Declaring himself president, Augustas Voldemaris, A-U-G-U-S-T-U-S-V-O-L-D-E-M-A-R-E-S, and his premier, Antanas Smetona, A-N-T-A-N-A-S-S-M-E-T-O-N-A, shaped Lithuania into Europe's second fascist state, based explicitly on the example of Mussolini's Italy. That last sentence again. Lithuania declared independence from Tsarist Russia in 1918, but in 1926, the Nationalist Party took power through a military coup. Declaring himself president, Augustas Voldemaris and his premier, Antanas Smetona, shaped Lithuania into Europe's second fascist state, based explicitly on the example of Mussolini's Italy. Lithuania remained a dictatorship until 1939, when Smetona fled to the U.S., and a new parliament voted unanimously to become a constituent republic of the USSR. With the German invasion of the Soviet Union in 1941, Lithuania's nationalists returned briefly to power and assisted the Nazis in the swift, systematic slaughter of more than 130,000 Lithuanian Jews, communists, and other, quote, undesirables, unquote. Let's sum up this particular section, because it's important that we understand this before we proceed into the rest of the article. First of all, the main vehicles, and they are interrelated, for the U.S. covert action inside Lithuania are the Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid, or LCRA, and the Lithuanian Information Center, or LIC, they in turn being used by the National Endowment for Democracy. It should be noted here, perhaps in this context, that in Radio Free America number 17, we went into the long-standing pattern of cooperation between elements of the Catholic Church, the Vatican, and fascism. This is not meant as an impugnment of the Catholic faith. As I pointed out extensively in that particular broadcast, one should not equate the Vatican with Catholicism any more than you should equate the White House with the United States as a whole. But it's worth noting in this context. It's worth noting again that Lithuania had been part of the Russian Empire for many years. It declared its independence in 1918 when the Bolshevik Revolution occurred. In 1926, the Nationalist Party, about which we will say more in a minute, took power, and that the Nationalist Party specifically shaped Lithuania into the second European fascist state, specifically modeled on the example of Mussolini's Italy. By the way, we went into Mussolini's fascist state, the corporate state, in Uncle Sam and Il Duce, subtitled American Support for Mussolini, and the mythology of the corporate state. So mainly we want to bear in mind here Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid and the Lithuanian Information Center, their support from the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, and bear in mind Lithuania's explicitly fascist past, actually appropriate, because as we're going to see, Lithuania's past and Lithuania's present are converging in a very disturbing fashion. Continuing with the description of how NED has become involved in Lithuania. In April of 1990, a 34-year-old American, William J.H. Huff, H-O-U-G-H, III, was very busy in Lithuania. Huff was sent to Lithuania, although he doesn't speak Lithuanian, as legal advisor to Vytautas Landsbergis, the leader of the Nationalist Party. By the way, the leader's name is Vytautas Landsbergis. That last sentence again. In April of 1990, a 34-year-old American, William J.H. Huff III, was very busy in Lithuania. Huff was sent to Lithuania, although he doesn't speak Lithuanian, as legal advisor to Vytautas Landsbergis, the leader of the Nationalist Party. He was recommended by LCRA-LIC, which the U.S. press has cited as very enthusiastic about his work. Cooperating closely with Huff, LCRA-LIC has supplied Sejudis with paper, photocopy machines, computers, laser printers, fax machines, and video cameras. With additional political and technical expertise, Vilnius quickly became a communications hub for secessionist forces in Lithuania and other Soviet republics. And I would note in that context, on the back of this issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin, there is a photograph of members of the Ukrainian Nationalist Organization arriving in Vilnius to voice their support for independence. The UPA we went into in Radio Free America shows 1. We went back into it in 14 and 15, as well as in the miscellaneous archive show Nazis and Anti-Semites on George Bush's campaign. That was a major organization which cooperated first with the Third Reich and later with the Galen Organization, CIA, and the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. Continuing with Banowski's article about nurturing Baltic reaction, talking about William J.H. Huff. Professionally, Huff is a lawyer. He was also an editor of the New York Law School Journal of International and Comparative Law, which published in its winter 1985 issue his book-length article entitled, quote, "The Annexation of the Baltic States and Its Effect on the Development of Law Prohibiting Forcible Seizure of Territory." Huff describes the interwar period of Lithuanian history as one of, quote, "political and constitutional stability," unquote, and again quoting, "progress toward the restoration of full democracy." Just how ludicrous that interwar period of Lithuanian history, that description of Lithuanian interwar history. I think it's in light of the fact that this was a fascist state modeled on Mussolini's Italy. I think it's pretty clear that Huff has some very serious biases. Just how serious those biases are, we are about to see. For that last sentence again. Huff describes the interwar period of Lithuanian history as one of, quote, "political and constitutional stability," unquote, and again quoting, "progress toward the restoration of full democracy," unquote. He fails to mention the collaboration of nationalists and Nazis. In his public justifications of secession, Landsbergis has frequently referred to Huff's interpretation of Lithuanian history. Huff's history of Lithuania must be reassuring to NED's ideologues and their Lithuanian clients, some of whom share a past they might reasonably prefer to forget. Interesting footnote to that passage about Huff and some of his past associations. Huff worked from 1986 to 1987 as law clerk to then New Hampshire Supreme Court Justice David Souter, recently confirmed as Bush's first appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't know how significant that association is, but it certainly doesn't make me feel very good about David Souter, the unknown who's now an associate Supreme Court justice. So again, in this particular period, we're looking in this particular section here before we move on. William J.H. Huff is the individual who is operating on behalf of NED and LCRA/LIC in Vilnius, Lithuania, political advisor to Landsbergis, the head of Sejudis, and a person who describes fascist Lithuania as, quote, political, its period as political and constitutional stability and, quote, "progress toward the restoration of full democracy." Just how ludicrous that is, we will see presently. Continuing with Banowski's article. During the past 2 years, NED has granted $70,000 to LCRA-LIC. They are not obviously democratic organizations. Interjecting, that is something of an understatement, as we shall see. Founded in 1961 to, quote, provide the church under the Soviet oppression with spiritual and material assistance, unquote, LCRA's parent organization was the Lithuanian Roman Catholic Priests League. The quiet obscurity of this group belies the welcome they receive in the halls of power. LCRA Executive Director Father Kazimir Pugevcius, and that's spelled P-U-G-E-V-I-C-I-U-S, served in 1983 on an advisory committee to Senator Charles Percy, Republican of Illinois, then a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He was also welcomed in the Reagan White House in 1986. According to LCRA-LIC, its 1990 grant application to NED requested $618,300 and outlined its ambitious proposal as follows. Five separate pro-democratic organizations would receive technical and material aid. The first, a coalition of democratic parties enjoying broad support in Lithuania and capable of assuming leading roles in the new legislature, would receive computer and audio-visual equipment. Communications and video equipment will also be transported to the Sąjūdis Information Agency. According to NED, funds went only to Sąjūdis. That's an interjection by the author. Continuing, the second part of the project would ensure a continuous supply of much-needed paper for independent publishers and organizations. The dramatic increase in the number of democratic groups in Lithuania in the past year has caused severe shortages in the very limited pool of resources. Because of the greater degree of liberalization in Lithuania, this republic has emerged as the publishing center for the independent groups throughout the Soviet Union. Then continuing with Banowski's text here. Within weeks of the arrival of these goods, traditional sources of information in Lithuania were suppressed or taken over by Sąjūdis. Nationalist sympathizers cut off broadcast programming from Moscow, and Lithuania was soon flooded with secessionist propaganda. In the ensuing election, Sąjūdis managed to dominate the scene by riding the crest of a wave of nationalist sentiment. It won a majority in the Seim, S-E-I-M, or Parliament. In March, a hastily convened session of Parliament voted for secession 91-38 in a matter of hours. Laws were passed curbing opposition newspapers and changing the flag and national anthem, reverting to versions in use during the nationalist period. As to whether or what of real substance to change, Sąjūdis remained silent. Those last couple of sentences again. Laws were passed curbing opposition newspapers and changing the flag and national anthem, reverting to versions in use during the nationalist period. And a couple of pages later, there's a picture of the current Lithuanian emblem, and it shows a white knight on a red field, and it's captioned under Sąjūdis, Lithuania has replaced hammer and sickle with the white knight on a red field used by the Svandoriai during the nationalist and fascist period of the 20s and 30s. We'll go into the Svandoriai, spelled S-A-V-A-N-D-O-R-I-A-I in just a second. They were the fascist militia during the nationalist slash fascist period. They then, many of them anyway, jumped enthusiastically to the Third Reich and became Third Reich proxies during the Nazi occupation of the Baltics. So, summing up what we've seen in that particular section, again, the expansion of NED activity in Lithuania under the auspices of LCRA slash LIC is paramount. It's worth noting that Sąjūdis was the main beneficiary, obviously, of this activity, in as much as William Huff was the chief advisor to Longsbergis, that they not only cut off broadcast programming from Moscow. Obviously, that's something which is going to greatly provoke Moscow. They voted for secession, and they advocated secession, but that they curbed opposition newspapers. That is anything but democratic. And they also changed the flag and the national anthem to those used during the fascist and nationalist period. Anything but democratic, and as we shall see, that is apparently symptomatic of exactly the kinds of forces being promoted in Lithuania. Continuing with Banowski's article. To Lithuanians old enough to remember the Second World War, the energetic activities of Sąjūdis, LCRA, and LIC must seem vaguely familiar. Landsbergis' father was a member of the Svandoriai, or nationalist militia, who fought the Russians in 1918 and 19, helped enforce the successive dictatorships of Voldemaris and Shimotona, and collaborated with the German occupation. The last sentence again. Landsberg's father was a member of the Spandaurei, or nationalist militia, who fought the Russians in 1918 and 19, helped enforce the successive dictatorships of Voldemaras and Shmatona, and collaborated with the German occupation. A reporter for Der Spiegel wrote in April of 1990 that, quote, "Everybody fears Sejudis. Anyone who attacks Sejudis is declared an enemy of the people by Landsbergis, and that happens very quickly," unquote. In addition, the Spandaurei, illegal under Soviet law, have been revived under the leadership of retired army officers. And again here, I think it's worth noting that Landsbergis' father was a member of the Spandaurei. In addition to banning opposition newspapers and advocating secession, the Spandaurei were revived. The national anthem and flag were changed back to those that were in use during the fascist and nationalist period. And as we shall see, the Spandaurei collaborated enthusiastically with the Third Reich during the German occupation of Lithuania. Continuing with Banofsky's article. Prior to the German invasion in June of 1944, a Berlin-based Lithuanian Information Bureau, unquote, the propaganda arm of the Lithuanian Activist Front, a nationalist exile organization, sent the following message into Lithuania, quote, "Liberation is close at hand. Uprisings must be started in the cities, towns, and villages of Lithuania. Communists and other traitors must be arrested at once. The traitor will be pardoned only provided he proves beyond doubt that he has killed one Jew at least." In the book Blowback, Christopher Simpson crisply summarizes part of the, quote, liberation, unquote, that followed. Municipal killing squads employing Lithuanian Nazi collaborators eliminated 46,692 Jews in fewer than 3 months, according to their own reports, mainly by combining clock-like liquidation of 500 Jews per day in the capital city of Vilnius with mobile, quote, cleanup, unquote, sweeps through the surrounding countryside. Such squads were consistently used by the Nazis for their dirty work that even the SS believed to be beneath the dignity of the German soldier. On August 4th, 1941, the Lithuanian Activist Front, installed as a provisional government, taking care to cooperate fully with the... One more time. On August 4th, the Lithuanian Activist Front, installed as a provisional government, taking care to... This is a misprint. On August 4th, 1941, the Lithuanian Activist Front was installed as a provisional government, taking care to cooperate fully with the Nazis. The invaders let President Juozas Ambrazevičius, I'm going to call it, that name is Juozas Ambrazevičius, Ambrazevičius, I'll call it, one more time. The invaders let President Juozas Ambrazevičius' government stand for 3 months, during which time the worst of the killings occurred. After the war, Ambrazevičius fled to the U.S., where he changed his name to Brazaitis, B-R-A-Z-A-I-T-I-S. The crimes which prompted the post-war flight of many Lithuanian nationalists were starkly documented in the Jaeger Report, an unofficial count by the SS officer who supervised the massacres. And that's quoted here. Einsatzkommando 3, Kovno, December 1st, 1941, secret state document. Summary of all executions carried out in the sphere of action of Einsatzkommando 3 up to December 1st, 1941. Einsatzkommando 3 took over its duties as security police in Lithuania on the second day of July, 1941. In compliance with my directives and on my order, the Lithuanian partisans have carried out the following executions. And then returning to Banofsky's text, what followed was a chronological accounting of the activities of the killing squads. Victims were neatly categorized: Jewish men, Jewish women, Jewish children, Poles, Lithuanian communists, Russian communists, intellectual Jews, lunatics, gypsies, political instructors, Armenians. After the first 3,000 deaths, Jaeger apparently decided that the Lithuanian nationalists alone were not equal to the task. Again, quoting from the Third Reich document, the Jaeger Report, by the way, an SS report. After organizing a mobile unit under SS Obersturmführer Hamann, H-A-M-A-N-N, and 8 to 10 tried men of EK3, the following actions were carried out in cooperation with the Lithuanian partisans. Before the EK3 assumed security duties, the partisans themselves killed 4,000 Jews through pogroms and executions. I can state today that the goal of solving the Jewish problem in Lithuania has been reached by EK3. There are no Jews in Lithuania anymore except the work Jews and their families. The goal to clear Lithuania of Jews could be achieved only thanks to men who adopted my goal without any reservations and managed to secure the cooperation of the Lithuanian partisans and the respective civil offices. One more time, quoting the last couple of sentences, the goal to clear Lithuania of Jews could only be achieved thanks to men who adopted my goal without any reservations and managed to secure the cooperation of the Lithuanian partisans and the respective civil offices. The final tally of those killed was 137,346. As the report clearly indicates, the Nazis were assisted by both the paramilitary bands associated with the Nationalists and by those in positions of authority, including members of the Catholic clergy. Well, summing up what we looked at in that particular section of the article, we have looked at what happened in Lithuania under the Third Reich occupation, and it should be noted that, again, Landsbergis, the head of Sejudis, aided by NED and LCRA-LIC, Landsbergis' father was a member of the Svandorii, the fascist-slash-nationalist militia, which collaborated enthusiastically with the Third Reich. Recall that Sejudis and Landsbergis changed the Lithuanian flag and national anthem to those in use during the fascist and nationalist period. It should be noted also that the Svandorii, illegal under Soviet law, were revived by Landsbergis and Sejudis, and this is an organization which collaborated enthusiastically with the Third Reich in their brutal excesses in Lithuania during the Second World War. It should also be noted here that Archbishop Marcinkus, we looked at in connection with the Vatican banking scandals and with the P2 machinations inside the Vatican, is also Lithuanian, also from the Chicago area. And as we're going to see, Bishop Burgess, if that's the correct pronunciation of the name, is also from that area. Note also, before we move on, that the fellow Jesus Ambrzevis, Ambrzevicius, I'm going to call it Ambrzevicius again, fled to the United States, which has proved such a very safe haven for so many fascists and Nazis over the years. Continuing with the next section here of Banowski's article. As Auxiliary Bishop of Kaunas, or Kovno, K-A-U-N-A-S, or K-O-V-N-O, during the German occupation, Bishop Vincentius Burgess, founder of LCRA-LIC, lent his spiritual authority to fascism. When the Nazis retreated, so did he. First to Germany, then to Chicago, where he has lived, worked, and carried the nationalist banner for 25 years. Bear in mind, this is the fellow who founded LCRA-LIC, the organization being used by NED and the U.S. National Security Establishment to interfere in the affairs of Lithuania. The clergy hated socialism for very clear reasons. The socialist government which came to power in 1939 had separated church and state. Church property was confiscated, including large farms where peasants labored under semi-feudal conditions eliminated elsewhere in Europe centuries before. Clergy were removed from government and the educational system, two institutions where they had long wielded powerful influence. Archbishop Shverbekis, Archbishop Shverekis, I'm going to call it, S-K-V-I-R-E-C-K-S, Burgess Superior, documented the bishop's collaborationist activities with evident satisfaction. The Archbishop's diary for July 1, 1941, reveals that Burgess made contact, quote, with the representative of the German government for the Baltic states, Dr. Gruffe, G-R-O-F-F-E, formerly head of Gestapo in East Prussia, who proposed that he, Burgess, should make an appeal to the people to behave quietly and pursue their daily business with confidence without any fear that they might be harmed. One more time, Archbishop Shverekis, Burgess Superior, documented the bishop's collaborationist activities with evident satisfaction. The Archbishop's diary for July 1, 1941, reveals that Burgess made contact, quote, with the representative of the German government for the Baltic states, Dr. Gruffe, formerly head of Gestapo in East Prussia, who proposed that he, Burgess, should make an appeal to the people to behave quietly and pursue their daily business with confidence without any fear that they might be harmed, unquote. Bear in mind, once again, the fellow that Archbishop Shverekis is referring to is his immediate subordinate, Burgess, who is the head and founder, or was the founder, I should say, of LCRA-LIC, the main U.S. vehicle for involvement in Lithuania. Continuing here with the article, On June 30th of 1941, the Archbishop had written, quote, "The ideas in Mein Kampf on the question of the Bolshevik Jewish contagion are splendid. They prove that Hitler is not only an enemy of the Jews, but generally speaking, has the right ideas." One more time, this is the fellow who heads, who founded LCRALIC, Archbishop Vincentius Burgess. On June 30th, 1941, the Archbishop had written, quote, "The ideas in Mein Kampf on the question of the Bolshevik Jewish contagion are splendid. They prove that Hitler is not only an enemy of the Jews, but generally speaking, has the right ideas," unquote. An appeal to welcome the Nazis was broadcast by radio, then published in a major Kaunas newspaper signed by Schwerekus, Burgess, and Vicar General Saulus. That's S-A-U-L-Y-S. Their signatures were also on a formal telegram of thanks to Hitler for, quote, "Lithuania's liberation," sent in the middle of July of 1941. That telegram and those obnoxious views, again, coming from Burgess. Continuing with Banowski's text, "As the Nazis and their collaborators implemented the diabolical logic of Mein Kampf, Burgess, quote, set an example for the entire population by forbidding the clergy to aid the Jews in any way," unquote. He also urged from his pulpit and via radio and newspaper that Lithuanians cooperate with the Nazis. When the Soviet Army, led by its 16th Lithuanian Division, drove the Nazis out in 1944, Burgess fled to safety in Germany and then to the U.S. Sent to the Archdiocese of Chicago, he helped launch Lithuanian Catholic Religious Aid in 1961 and served as LCRA president until 1986. He is now chair of the board of directors. Well, that passage, tragically and disgustingly, speaks very clearly for itself. Archbishop Burgess, obviously, was an enthusiastic Third Reich proxy and worked hand in glove with the Third Reich, and not only was it a practical consideration, he obviously was in agreement with the goals of the Third Reich. Another interesting connection here is discussed by, and it's also worth noting again that he fled first to Germany, then to the U.S., and settled in Chicago, which is where Archbishop Marcinkus also comes from, himself a Lithuanian, and in light of the pro-fascist and pro-U.S. intelligence activities of the P2, founded by Licio Gelli, himself an Oberleutnant in the SS, Archbishop Marcinkus' situation, and possible, I say possible connection to Archbishop Burgess and the events and elements we're talking about here are to be borne in mind. Continuing here with the very last section of this article that I'm going to read, a couple of other interesting connections here of LCRA, LIC. Director of Special Projects for LCRA, LIC is Raza Razgaitis, R-A-Z-G-A-I-T-I-S, stepdaughter of accused war criminal Jurgis Juodis, J-U-R-G-I-S, J-U-O-D-I-S. Because of his involvement as a nationalist military officer in the massacres of 1941, Juodis became the subject of a Justice Department Office of Special Investigations, or OSI, inquiry in 1981. In addition to her work with LCRA, Razgaitis is head of, quote, Americans for Due Process, unquote, an organization, quote, formed solely to challenge the activities of the Justice Department's War Crimes Unit, unquote. She is also a friend of Patrick Buchanan, through whom she gained access to the Reagan White House when Buchanan was communications director. Just as Landsbergis, the head of Sejudis' father, was a member of the Svandoria, the fascist militia, and just as he revived not only the fascist national anthem and flag in Lithuania, and revived the Svandoria, the enthusiastic collaborators with the Nazis and the excesses I've described here, so this other key member of LCRA, the director of special projects, is the daughter of another accused war criminal, also tight with Patrick Buchanan. Continuing here, AFL-CIO President Lane Kirkland is a longtime member of the Cold Warrior Clique Committee on the Present Danger and supports CIA manipulation of labor movements around the globe. Kirkland has welcomed Landsbergis as a friend during his U.S. visits. Kirkland's name was on an open letter to President Bush published in the April 22, 1990 New York Times, calling for immediate recognition of Lithuanian independence. Kirkland is on the NED board.
That begins from AFA 36, from February of 1991, also reprised in For the Record 848. This concludes For the Record 858, the NED file, being recorded on August 14th of the year 2015. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.